One, two, three, four.
Hi, I'm Scott.
And I'm Daniel. Why are we being so weird?
Well, I think that we always should have a variety of exciting openings for our wonderful listener.
So we're delivering to our listeners a variety of openings.
Yes, thank you.
On display. Which, we are displaying our variety
of openings.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, that's a good start. Daniel.
Yes, Scott.
Your haircut looks wonderful. We're recording on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, and we're going to be uploading, love that word, on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, because you got your haircut yesterday.
I did, and that is one of those things that I could not control. I had had made an appointment, and my hairdresser called me and said, well, he texted me and just like, oh, I accidentally, when I gave you that appointment, I was triple booked. I didn't realize that, and so I need to move you. I'm going to stay open late on Tuesday. Can you come in? And instead of making it a whole big deal, I figured, you know what? I'll just ask Scott if he's okay in moving it. And so, you know, that's what I did.
I see. Well, you know, it was well worth it because your normal gorgeousitude has been magnified to a place of you belong in a picture book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's
you're very welcome.
That's so nice of you to say. It's so uncharacteristically nice of you to.
Well, now that's not true. I'm a nice person. I was in a very bad mood last week because of the familial difficulties that worked themselves out.
Mm-hmm. I thought for a moment there, I thought you were quoting Steel Magnolias, and I was going to give you kudos for quoting Steel Magnolias because you're like, I've just been in a very bad mood for the last 40 years.
Well, yeah, that's true too. That's very true. Weeza, good old Weeza. So what, Daniel?
I don't know.
You don't know?
You were talking about my haircut. Let's continue talking about how lovely my haircut looks.
Yes, you look lovely. And, yeah. And my hair always looks wonderful.
Your hair is, if I didn't know better, I would swear was, you know, fake, that it was like, prearranged and faked.
It's always that wonderful shine.
It is.
That my hair has.
Is that some kind of wax or like balm?
It's the balm of Gilead.
The balm of Gilead.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a biblical reference, and I'm going to take a sip of my coffee. Will you excuse me?
I will excuse you to do so as I ponder what that biblical reference could be. I am not, as you know, a biblical person.
Well, you know, the only reason that I am is because I get into arguments with religious people and I don't want to come at them completely ignorantly. And the best way, and forgive me if you're a religious person out there and you're going to get offended, but this is my truth and you have your truth. This mm-hmm. is my truth. Mm-hmm. I believe
his truth goes marching on.
Now, listen to me. Listen to me, Mr. Man, before I get back to the Bible.
Yes.
I bit my tongue off about 3 minutes ago because you said something that keyed a song lyric in my head, and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to sing it. I'm not going to devolve into song. I am going to maybe start thinking about not singing so much. And what did you just do? You sang.
I did.
Now, back to the biblical stuff. The best way to argue with a religious person, most especially an evangelical Christian, because they're the ones that will argue with you. And they're the ones that are coming at you trying to change you.
Yes.
Other religions, not so much. You know, the Jews are like, listen, you're going to hell. Fine. Don't worry about me. Except they don't believe in hell. I don't believe, but I'm not sure for sure.
I believe that the Jews believe in some kind of waiting room, like that has like...
No, that's Catholic purgatory.
Oh, is that the waiting room that doesn't have the up-to-date magazines and like all the highlight puzzles are torn out?
No, that's Beetlejuice.
Oh, okay.
Jeez. Anyway, I shouldn't talk about religions I don't know about, but I don't think the Jews have devils and heavens and hell. They have dibbucks. But
you know who but just a sidetrack here, you know, who is it that believes in reincarnation?
That would be the Hindus, I believe.
So I was thinking about this the other day. This is just a one-off here, but follow me on my logic. If reincarnation actually happened.
Yes.
Why wouldn't our pets be more well behaved? Because they would have like them. Oh yeah, shit! I know that. If I had a dog, I remember what this is like. Let me just eat the pill and not make a big deal about it.
Well, that's a cute concept, but I think the true idea of reincarnation is each incarnation of your life, you have learned from the past and you are better for the past and you are more evolved.
Yes.
Than you. So if you are a dog, you don't come back as a dog. You come right. back as a
Yeah, but all right, but if you're like if you're Trump, you definitely aren't going forward, so you got to take a step backwards there or something. Anyway, I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
No, it's
so
all right,
sorry. Biblically speaking, I interrupted you.
That's what our show is about. If you look in the Bible, and that's how it started this conversation, I actually have a Bible in my bedside nightstand. I kid you not, just like religious people do. Mm-hmm. And I am a screaming angry, I'm an angry atheist. I'm not just an atheist, I'm an angry atheist. So the best way to argue is to know what their quote unquote ammunition is. And then see the folly of it. Mm-hmm. If you read the contradictions in the Bible are unbelievable. They are unbelievable.
And what was the phrase that was biblical that I didn't get?
Balm of Gilead. And I'm not positive the Balm of Gilead is biblical, but I think it is because I heard it in a play. But did you find it when you? Because you're Googling. I can tell.
I'm on Bible.com and I just typed in Gilead to see what it.
We'll do Balm of Gilead.
There's a camp.
This
in
is
going to
be exciting listening.
The young prophet
but what
went
else is
to
new?
Ramoth Gilead.
Anyway, this wasn't even a subject on our Let's Talk
it
About It list.
But I just, but it, I personally love our little, asides.
Our side notes.
Yeah. It makes our conversation all that more enjoyable.
Well, that's one opinion. But as in Hull.
Yes.
So anyway, I would say to one, if you want to find out what's wrong with religion, read the Bible.
Okay.
It'll help you out.
So I would like to commend you.
Uh-oh. This isn't going to end well.
No. Whether it's my Disney pin videos or Adam's and my Star Trek videos, you're always on our videos with comments. I appreciate that more than you can know. I love that you comment and, hopefully you click the little like button. I love that.
I do. Mm-hmm. And I do it because I know it helps out channels. That's but right. Also, I do it because I genuinely enjoy your stuff. I really do. And so, and I'm, you know me, I have an opinion about everything. And so I'm usually going to state it in the comment section. So it isn't totally kindness on my part. There's a little bit of...
But I can't help but notice that here on the board, it says, yes. Look at the fucking camera.
Yeah, look into the lens.
Oh, look into the lens.
Look into the goddamned lens. Yes.
Yes.
And the reason that I wanted to discuss that is because this, and I believe this to be an affect from the selfie phenomena.
Okay.
Where people take the selfies, but they don't realize that when they're looking into their own image, their own gorgeous image, they are not connecting with the viewer. So it is poured into the YouTube because I, as you know, I'm a YouTube fanatic. Where I watch most everything. It's either Netflix or YouTube that I'm watching, and sometimes Prime Video.
Yes.
Lady. But I notice 9 times out of 10, individuals that make YouTube videos are talking to themselves because they are talking to the image in their phone. They're talking to the viewfinder. They're not talking into the lens. And so they're always looking off somewhere.
Yes.
Why this annoys me so much, I do not know.
So but it, which of my videos was I not looking into the lens?
You never.
Oh, never.
You never. And I was the last, your last Star Trek Mix Minus video.
Yes.
I was looking at both of you intently, both you and Adam Burns. Love yes. Adam Burns. And he stopped swiveling in his chair.
I know.
So proud of him. So proud. And I could see his physical body like actually twitching because he wanted to spin in his chair so bad. rock back and forth in his magic desk chair, and he didn't. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at the fact that both of you are looking into the lens. So I would ask you, do you both just look in the lens when you're talking to each other?
Yeah, when we're doing the mix minus video.
Yes.
The cameras that we are using are not our webcam, so they're, you know, regular, so they're slightly next to our webcam. Yes, I stare at the lens because I know, you know what I'm saying? I know it's going to be up in a two shot, and that's the only way that it's going to look natural. So I try to look, if we were to post video of our actual podcast, it would be like right now, I'm looking down from your perspective, I'm looking down, but I'm looking at your picture on the screen. So I'm actually making eye contact with you. But yeah, so on, because those Star Trek videos are so short, they're like, you know, 10, 15 minutes. It's easy to just stay looking up at the camera, unless I'm looking at the screen to take a note or something like that. The Aristocrafts videos, though, I will try to be more conscious of that.
Well, actually, I didn't notice you not looking. I'm paying very close attention. Actually, I'm mostly looking at Zach, though.
That's help true. Me. You will Zachary, often point though, out the exact moment when he yawns in the video.
Yes, because he's always trying to stifle a yawn, and he's dozing off as you're speaking. And that, I find such great, wonderful, warm humor in that I could barely stand it. So, but I would say this to anyone. I can imagine all these young people that are listening to us.
Mm-hmm. All tons. Look into we're big with the Ute.
I know. They mm-hmm. love us. Yeah. Look into the lens. Look into the lens. Find out where your lens is and look into it. Do not look at your own image when you are making a video, because it just annoys the fuck out of me. And that should be reason alone that you know that it annoys the fuck out of Scott. So you shouldn't do it.
Well, there you go. You know who will be looking into the lens?
You are good.
Thank you.
Damn.
I was working on that one. You know who will be looking into the lens and maybe even catching a side reflection of themselves in some plexiglass would be.
Who would that be, Daniel?
Kamala Harris tonight.
Kamala Harris.
That's right. Now, I hopefully will have this show posted before the vice presidential debate. So if you're listening to this as soon as it posted.
Goddamn presidential last week. I had to wait. I had to ask you, where is our show?
I wanted to watch the debate.
Well, you got to get your priorities straight, young man.
But it was as soon as the debate ended, I got an email from you going, where's the show? And I was just, oh, Jesus. Let me just finish it.
I know. Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. This is going to be me. I get very excited. When we do this, I get very excited. How is it going to sound? How is it going to sound when it's all put together?
That's right.
And there's that weird time. So I get excited. And I watched the debate and I got bored after it was over and I wanted something to do.
You know what?
That's all.
Before we talk about the VP debate,
yes.
Anyone listening would like to contribute some closing lines for either Drew or Zach to say. They're both out. Like I've run through all of the, because at the end of the show, it's either your husband.
Are you saying both Zachary and Drew are out?
Yes, they've been out for many years. But when I was at the end of our show, the voices that you hear at the end of our show are either my boyfriend, Zach, or Scott's husband, Drew. And so I, a while back, started having them read just complete non sequitur, things like the tram spiel at Walt Disney World or, you know, something like that. And so I've used all of them now. So I need some more, but I don't, they're both lovely people. They're both like, okay, what would you like me to say? And then I have to give them something to say. So if you're out there, if you have an idea of something short that they could say at the end of the show that's just a complete non sequitur, send it to me. And
yes.
Yeah.
And how would they do that?
They would use our email that you'll hear about at the end of the show when you listen to either Drew or Zach tell you the email address.
I got it. That's
I
good.
I can't be expected to do everything on this show, Scott.
Well, mostly.
Yeah,
I
mostly,
mean, there was an agreement we had at the very beginning when I said, do you want to do this podcast? And I will do it under this proviso that I don't have to do anything but be pretty and talk.
Okay. So
and
tonight on the VP debate.
Yes. Oh, let's talk about the VP debate.
I listened to the New York Times podcast every day, The Daily, and they were advertising in one of their things that they're going to be airing the vice presidential debate with a bunch of New York Times reporters that will be fact checking. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to be live, because if they're live fact checking, I would want to listen. But if it's just they're going to talk about it afterwards, well, I don't know that. What will be your way of... Zach really wants to watch it on MSNBC because that's our channel that we normally watch. So that's how we will be watching it tonight. How will you be watching the debate tonight? Will you be watching it on YouTube?
Any way I can. You know, as you well know, I am so far from tech savvy that they have to make up a new word for my complete lack of ability and knowledge of how this all works. Mm-hmm. The way we watched the presidential debacle was not a debate. It was a debacle.
Yes, it was.
We watched it on YouTube on C-SPAN.
Okay.
Up on the TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were watching the C-SPAN feed. And
so
that's
you
probably
have a YouTube app on your TV that you were just playing the YouTube.
Correct. Yeah. I also have the ability on my laptop on YouTube to cast it to that.
Cool.
So what I do is I put one like I'll put MSNBC or whatever on my laptop muted, and then I will put C-SPAN on the television with the sound on, and if something happens with either feed, then we can quickly switch and hear. So that's how prepared I am.
Wow, you have like a backup and everything.
Yeah, I do. What's very sad about tonight, however, is that Drew will only be able to watch 1 hour of the debate because he has an HOA Zoom meeting, because he's the president of our homeowners association. Among everything else that my incredible husband does, he is the he is the president of our homeowners association.
All right. I want him to see if he can bring this motion up.
Oh.
Sometime in the future. I know he'll listen to this show later. Drew, when you listen to this show.
That's a vulgar motion you're doing there.
What? No, I'm not. Drew, when you listen to this show later, Drew, I would like for you to propose that you guys change your name to the homeowners organization. Because I think who would be, it's the who. It's like all the who's in Whoville.
We would be like the Woodland Hills homeowner. So we'd be the whoo, 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 whoo.
Exactly. The woo.
Okay,
exactly.
I'll tell him.
Yes. He'll hear it. He'll hear it on the show.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You're
hi,
right.
Drew.
Oh, you know, he will say hi back.
I just heard him. He said hi back.
Okay, good. That's wonderful.
Okay. I don't know. I'm torn. I mean, Zach wants to watch it on MSNBC, so I will watch it on MSNBC. But I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to stream it from nytimes.com up here and record that and then come back and listen and see if they're doing live fact checking. If they are, then I'll listen to them on the next go round. If
you know,
there
you
is
said,
a next go round.
What you said last week about the presidential debate was, I don't think the profundity of it was really recognized because it was very profound. And that is this. Is anybody undecided?
No.
And also, do these things ever convince anybody otherwise what they already think? In other words, that piece of shit last time, that orange piece of shit, this shit-stained piece of orange shit-stained motherfucking piece of orange shit.
Yes.
Didn't dissuade, if even his supporters watched him, didn't dissuade anybody of his supporters. So now my husband keeps telling me that Biden keeps going up in the polls, even in like Florida and Georgia, where it's very unusual that he's going up in the polls. So maybe some good, I don't know.
But then a lot of that comes from the narrative afterwards. So it's just like, 'cause people who are going to sit down and devote 90 minutes of their time to watch the debate are probably partisan. They're probably people that have already selected their candidate. They just want to watch them perform. They want to see them score some points against the other side.
Yes.
Or,
I agree.
Or hear what the other side's crazy arguments are so that then they can counter their insane relatives later at some kind of dinner. But I think what does kind of move the needle a little bit is the narrative after the debates as to who won. So it's like it was pretty much overwhelmingly narrative-wise after the last debate that, you know, it was a complete shit show and Trump was basically the main cause of that. And he really just kept interrupting and he was rude and he was a bully and blah, blah, blah. That's one of those things that, you know, for those people who are undecided, They're like, well, I don't like that guy. He's a blowhard. Yeah, okay. This is like, but they didn't actually watch the debate, but they may be.
Is anybody undecided?
You would be surprised. You know, following politics is not something that most people do. There's actually a very small percentage of the population that follows politics on a regular basis. So this is the time of year, every 4 years, like around October this time, is
when Jeepers Creepers comes back.
It's when people start paying attention. There's people that have not been paying attention for the last 3.5 years that are now just beginning to pay attention to this whole thing. Who's running? Who's running? Is it that Jill Biden?
Now, I'm not voting for that Hillary. I don't like her.
No, I don't like Hillary.
I don't know why. I don't know why I don't like her. There's something about her.
Hey, Jeb, who are you voting for?
Who's that lady with the emails?
Well, it's not Hillary. I'll tell you what, not going to vote for Hillary, that's for sure.
No, damn. No, I don't like her and her emails.
Can we throw another accent other than Southern just so we're not saying Southerners are stupid?
I'm not going to vote for Hillary, no. And
that's because I'm not allowed. I'm not actually a fucking citizen.
She troubles. Oh, no, I've got my green card. I'm a citizen. I went through the entire process, and I am a citizen of the United States. I have dual citizenship. It's marvelous. But I'm not voting for Hillary. No, 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 no.
Why do all... What's the word for that style of English, that the very aristocratic English? They all just sound so gay. Even when they're not.
Yeah, well, you know, Archie Bunker said it best in All in the Family. England is kind of a fagdom. Actually said that on network television.
So
as a breakthrough show. Yes, darling.
As you are aware, it is October.
It is. It's the season of doom and gloom.
It is also.
Which is a joyous season.
It is also today. The day we were recording is October 7th. And a mere 5 days. No.
Help me, Lord Jesus.
A mere 4 days from now. I can't talk. A mere four mays from now. Is October 11th, which I believe, if memory serves me correctly, is National Coming Out Day. Is not National Coming Out Day. Is October 11th.
I'm coming out. I want the world to know I've got a loose butthole. Day. I'm coming out.
October 11th, 2020 is National Coming Out Day. This is something that first started in 1988. I believe Keith Haring even did some of the original artwork for it. So it is one of those National Coming Out
Days. It's an important day for the LGBTQRSTYVWXYZ community.
It is. And although both you and I have been out for a very long time.
Before speech replaced signed language.
Even before Drew and Zach. We have been out.
Yes.
But I thought that it would be nice in that spirit to maybe share our coming out stories.
Oh, yes. Where did you get that idea?
It came...
Just off the top of your newly shorn head.
Just out of the air.
That's wonderful. Well... You start, darling. I want to hear yours.
Mine is possibly the most boring, anticlimactic ever in the history of the everdom.
You know what? Actually, that's actually good.
Yeah.
It's actually good. But tell it anyway.
Okay, so I first kind of had to deal with it myself. I threw myself into religion from the time that I was like 16 until the time that I was like maybe 18. Like, you know, I was at the church all the time. I was in the youth group there. I was doing the preaching.
When Drew was listening to one of our podcasts and you were talking about singing in the church choir, he looked at me and said, "Church choir?"
Yeah.
So you pathed the religious road first.
Yeah. I wanted to. And the most awkward thing ever happened, which is something we can talk about when we talk about religion. But it was like one of my youth counselors came over to my house and did the whole laying on hands and for me to speak in tongues, which I never spoke in tongues. But he was very disappointed that I didn't start speaking in tongues. But
because you misunderstood what he wanted you to do with his tongue.
Clearly.
Or your tongue.
Clearly. Anyway, so I had to first come out to myself. Once I was okay with myself being gay, which, you know, we didn't have YouTube back then, but we did have online chat rooms. And so I was able to chat on CompuServe and on AOL with other gay people. And so I was able to to kind of talk to people that way and like learn, oh, okay, this is normal. This is a lot of people feel
blessing.
The same way. Yes.
What a blessing.
So I finally, I had moved out of the house. I lived on my own in an apartment and I had joined the Gay Men's Chorus. So at this point I'm out to all my gay friends, but I'm not out to my family. Right. Yeah. And so I actually started doing an on-air thing for our local community radio station. We had a show that aired for a half hour on Community Affairs Tuesdays in the middle of the morning. They gave the gay folks a half hour of radio time. And somebody at a bar once like said, oh, you like this all audio stuff and everything. Can you help us edit? And so I got involved in that. So I knew that I was going to be speaking on the radio and that there was a small chance that someone might hear it and then say something to my parents. So I decided
on the radio. Oh,
I decided that this was the time that I was going to make the move. So I went over to my parents' house on a Saturday morning, whatever, and was, you know, I often visited as gay folk do. We often visit with our family. So I went over and I visited with my family, my parents, and they had just
what age are you now?
I am now 53.
No. Then I'm talking about that
point. Oh, I must have been 19.
Okay.
Yeah, 19. Maybe 20.
So you went to visit
your parents. Anyway, so I went over to visit my parents and I basically said, you know, I have been singing with the Gay Men's Chorus and we have a concert coming up at the end of the month. And if you're not uncomfortable being there, I would love for you to be there. This is how I chose to come out to my parents. Basically very matter of fact, I've been singing with the Gay Men's Chorus. We have a concert coming up. I would like for you to be there if you're not uncomfortable doing so. And my mom, without missing a beat, was going, I have to check with your dad, but oh, the pictures are back from the ski trip. I want to see them.
Now, was that from discomfort?
Or no.
Was that
and
from,
then she left.
I knew it already.
Yes,
or
yes,
I'm being
basically.
I'm being casual.
She knew. Yeah. So it's okay. Like she left and I came back and I'm like, well, I'm going to base off of your reaction that you're not surprised by this. And she's like, no.
Okay.
So that was the completely, anticlimactic, boring way in which I came out to my family. However, go ahead and tell your story. And then I want to go back to the commonalities of what happens after you come out.
But go ahead.
How did you come out, Scott?
Well, I kind of was pulled out, but, and well, you know, what's interesting is I did a podcast, Vera Speaks for Real, mm-hmm. For 11 years. And I kept saying, I've got to do a blog. I've got to write down. I've got to tell you about my company. And I never did. In 11 years, I never did. So this is the first time that I am public. And it's no big shakes. I mean, it was big shakes for me, let me tell you. But it's no big shakes in the world. But it's the first time that I'm talking about this publicly.
So long, farewell. If I was trying to do your exit music from Vera Speaks for. It's like normally when you would say something like that on your show,
yes,
it
Vincent
would
Price was,
oh, we're out of
and
times.
I
can't,
yes,
my
you're
sweet,
very sweet
most
to remember
precious
that.
Lovies.
Oh, stop that now. All right, so
it's a world in a world exclusive. Scott comes out
in a world where gay people are shaved and shorn and put in front of each other with no pants on.
I don't know what any of that means. Okay, so I had in a time
not editing this. I want to watch the debate. Yes.
I know. Okay, and I don't want you to edit it out. In the time that I was growing up, I am 64 years old, and I was growing up in the 60s and the 70s, and came into my own in the late 70s. However, I was coming into my own since I was probably about 11, but it was a different world. Being gay was a mental illness still. Mm-hmm. Psychologically, it was in the psychological books as a mental illness. And there were no positive gay characters anywhere. There was no community. The only way that you could meet gay people was go to a gay bar.
Yes.
That was it. That was the only way that you could commune. And if you were young and gay, forget about it because you were alone and you felt alone and isolated. And it was horrific. It was horrible.
It's where men got together to drink beef broth.
Exactly. And so I felt that way. I felt like I was a sick, perverted individual, and it was awful. As I grew up and became really sexually starving and sexually active, I had my first gay fling. I was 17 years old, and it was the story I told about going to the neighborhood gay bar that I found it. Anyway, so the coming out part, I'll cut to that chase. I met my first long-term relationship, Rick, when I was 19 years old. And even though it really shouldn't have gone the way it did, we were together for 8 years. It shouldn't have been that way. But we were eventually together for 8 years. And I was working at a place called Busch Gardens at that time, and it was an amusement park in Van Nuys, California. And Rick would come by and leave notes on my car. So I would come out, I would leave work, and I would find a note, and it was always very sweet. And he wrote on anything. He wrote, like, there was a greeting card bag, and he'd write on the greeting card. Well, he wrote on the greeting card bag one time in when I was 19 years old in 1974, I think. It was 73, 4, 5, somewhere in there. I don't do well with math. He wrote on this bag, quit your job and let's run away together. Love, Rick. So I never had to physically hide anything from my parents because my parents weren't snoopy, or I thought they weren't snoopy. They didn't get into my stuff. So they didn't go into my room and get into my things. So there was a kind of a respect there. So I kept the note and I threw it on my bed because I was still living with my parents at 19. I lived with my parents until I was 19, and then later I had to move back in. But that's all such other stuff that I'm digressing from this incredibly interesting story.
That's so unlike you.
I know. Usually I'm right on track.
I know. We usually call you Scotty on the spot, man.
Casey Jones.
That's right.
Casey Jones on the track. Well, my mother went into my room for whatever reason and tells me, I don't know if this is truth or not, tells me she saw the pretty bag laying on the bed.
And I just had to look at it because it's so pretty.
It's pretty. Exactly. She sees the note. Now, I'm at Rick's house where he's living with his parents. I'm at Rick's house. And the phone rings and it's my mother, which is very strange. And my mother says,
Scott, can you come cut my TV?
Honey, we're at the movies.
Yeah? Why?
We're at the movies. I found something in your room.
Yeah?
What's the bag? What is that?
Yeah?
Is it true?
Now, here's where the roads could have gone in any direction. She asked me if it was true. Also at that time, I was studying acting with Charles Nelson Reilly, a very incredible, wonderful teacher, fantastic man, very gay, and somewhat a gay icon without saying I'm gay, but everybody knew he was gay. And he would talk to us about coming out and all that kind of stuff. And he said, if anybody, even in your family, gives you problems, fuck them. And also tell them in no uncertain terms, this is who I am, this is what I am, and if you, fuck them. So when my mother said to me, is it true? I said, in no uncertain terms, yes, absolutely, it's true. We're in love. I'm with him right now. She said,
I can't talk anymore. I'll see you at home.
Hung up the phone. I said to Rick, I got to go home because the shit has now hit the fan and I've got to do, you know, what Charles said. I got to be strong and assertive. So I go home. My mother, and you must understand this, I was attached to my mother's hip. My mother was the most important person in my world. It was probably somewhat unwell relationship, but I mean, she just was everything to me. And I mattered very much to her too. Mm-hmm. Well, she started to cry and for 8 years didn't stop. She said, I can't look at you. I can't talk to you. Oh, yeah. I can't talk to you. Whatever you do, don't tell my daddy. her, my grandfather, whatever you, my Armenian grandfather, whatever you do, don't tell granddad. I can't deal with this. I don't ever want to see Ricky. I don't want to ever see him again. He is not welcome here. So for 8 years, basically, aww, I moved out shortly after that, moved in with Ricky. And for 8 years, the only time that I would see my parents, I would go to their house, and Ricky was not welcome. Ricky, we didn't talk about Ricky. And it was for 8 years, hideous, absolutely hideous. In the period of that 8 years, and I'm sorry this went on so long, Daniel, because it's your coming out story.
It's fine. Fuck them.
Fuck them. Well, that's basically what I said, even though it tore me up, because I was very close to my family, but most especially close to my mother. Mm-hmm. So what happened in the course of the 8 years, in the changes in the world and the lightening of their load, and most especially, and I'm not being funny, I brought Drew, after Ricky and I broke up, I brought Drew to a Thanksgiving dinner where my mother was ice cold, and my father saw that and could not believe that my mother was being ice cold to anybody, because my mother is never ice cold to anyone. And so my father kind of took on the, I'm going to take care of this kid. So they talked about art, and a Michelangelo book was a thing. They talked about, and over the course of time, in a very short time, they fell in love with Drew. And I believe to this day, my mother loves Drew more than she loves me. But as in whole, that's what healed it. The seeing our Drew's and my relationship, seeing what we were, coming to understand. So it got better. But, and this is where I live today. And that's why I was so angry last week about having to take care of my mother. That 8 years really destroyed the relationship between my mother and I. It isn't that I haven't forgiven her, because there's nothing really to forgive. I understand it. I get it. Yeah. But my heart was so broken and so damaged by that it never healed. It can't heal. You cut off an arm and it doesn't grow back. That's my coming out story, Daniel. I came out because my mother found a gift card bag.
I thought that there was going to be like some left turn there. That it was just like, she called you and said, is it true? And you were like, yes, absolutely. It's absolutely true. And then you got home. I thought she was just going to be upset that you were quitting your job. Like, is it true you're quitting your job?
Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Brewer.
That's my alternate. All right. So let's try to find some commonalities here.
Okay.
Once you did come out. And all right, so first commonality first. We both defined our coming out moments as pretty much after we had come out within the community. Like, those are two separate kinds of things. Like discovering other gay people and communing with other gay people doesn't necessarily mean you're out, right? That is something that happens before your defining coming out moment, right?
Correct. I believe if you want to define coming out, I believe that, or living out, mm-hmm. I believe that there's never any, you know, there's never any question when right. when you go to work, you talk about your husband, your partner, your boyfriend, right. You don't say, I used to say there.
Yes.
I used there at work right. about Ricky.
And I believe that's another common thread, is the constant monitoring of your language, the constant always. Stress of like, did I say the right pronoun? Did I say the right thing? You know,
am I lisping?
Right. Am I
smoking my cigarette like a fag? Am I all those yeah. things that plague, especially back then,
yeah.
but I'm sure still do, that plague us as gay people.
Yeah.
The constant self-monitoring, and then the constant not being ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we are deeming being ourselves as being something wrong. We are seeing being who we are as troubling to other people. And that is a horrible, horrible place to live.
It is.
Because the best thing is being absolutely us, and you take me or you leave me.
Right. And FYI, not that anyone's arguing with this, but it's like, you know, there are people that will leave you regardless of whether you're
absolutely.
Out. I mean, it's like, this is really not something that's going to make a break. You're going to find in your life, there's all kinds of things that people are going to draw arbitrary lines about that they will either get over, or, you know, you will not have those friendships. So, and it's fine. There's plenty of other fish in the sea. But I think another commonality, something I've heard from everyone who's ever come out, is the, you know, cliche, it's like a weight being lifted off your shoulders. And it is. It is. It is a very freeing, very, there's a period of time after you come out to your family, or you come out at large, that probably little less than a month of where you incessantly fucking talk about it. Like, you figure out a way to talk about it in every single conversation that you have, just because you're so freed of not having to hide it anymore. So you end up just being like this babbling, ball of energy where it's just like, and then I told him, that's right, I said him, because I don't know if you knew it or not, that I'm gay. It's just like, you have to just like, very, very not subtly at all, just work that into every conversation, so...
Well, what you have done is you have reminded me of something about my own coming out situation, and that is that I came out personally and familially, but not business.
Uh-huh.
In show business, believe it or not, being gay in show business is really, really bad. It's looked down on. Changing.
Yes.
Changing a lot now. But when I started in 19... when did I start?
I'm Walter Cronkite.
I think 85 I started doing in showbiz and voiceover commercials, TV stuff. Yes. I was not out, and I didn't talk about my private life, and I didn't talk about my personal life, and I didn't talk about Drew. And it was very, very difficult and very troubling and very taxing and very... just incredibly difficult. And like you said, when I finally said, fuck it, and it took a long time in the business for me to finally say, fuck it. That's where the load was lifted for me, because that was such in the business. It was such a struggle to because everybody, you get together on Monday to record a show, and everybody talks about what they did on the weekend.
Right.
Well, I can't talk about what I did on the weekend. Or if I do, I have to exclude Drew or make him a pronoun that he isn't.
Right.
And everybody's talking about their kids, and everybody's, and it's just, if when I finally said to the world, my business world, hey, I'm gay, I'm happily married, I got a wonderful husband, it was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm not uncomfortable anymore.
It's like that thing that you do in elementary school where you go stand in a doorway and you press your arms towards the door, right? Like you're exerting pressure. Like that's your barrier. Like that's your life being held in by these barriers. And as soon as you step out of that, your arms just want to float up because they want to stretch themselves up. And
well, we're very floaty people anyway, us homosexuals. Yeah. We love to float.
So there you go. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know both of our coming out stories. It is the most riveting piece of... put this down in the annals of podcasting history.
In the annals.
Annals. Annals.
We're talking about gay. Isn't everything gay anal?
That is a topic for another show. And
actually, we already did that topic.
Oh, well, okay. Well, then they should go and listen to that one. But we are out of time this week. You know what? We got a lovely email from Carol. Our listener, Carol, did you see that email? It was a very lovely
email. I did.
I
love Carol so much. She's a dear, dear friend who has been to the house and stayed with us. And
This is that Carol. Carol,
yes.
So you talked
lovely,
about on your
precious
own podcast.
Carol from Dunder, from down under. She's from...
It was one of those emails. We'll read it on next week. We had planned on doing this coming out show for a while, so that's why we knew we were going to take up time. So we'll read that email on the next show. But just so that you're aware, a little spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, it's basically, Scott, you're the most wonderful person ever in the history of the world, and I absolutely love you. Oh, it's nice to meet you, Daniel. So,
You Skyped out, as they say, so
exactly.
I didn't hear
you'll have
the
to wait
funny...
until it posts to
I
hear
will.
It.
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to wait a long time because there's a debate tonight. So somewhere around midnight, I'll be listening.
All right.
Daniel, this was really... I hope that our listeners enjoy it because I really, really enjoyed hearing, even though you thought it was anticlimactic, I really enjoyed hearing what your journey was.
Aww.
I did.
I was sad to hear about your mother.
Yeah, well, she's paying the price now, but and it's not like I'm trying to charge her. It just is. I'm not going to belabor it. Yes, we already talked about that, didn't we?
That's right. But we'll talk about it some next week.
Thank you. Goodbye, Daniel.
Goodbye, Scott.
Flavin.
Thank you for listening to That Darn Elvis. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email us contact@thatdarnelvis.com or send us a voicemail by going to voicemail.thatdarnelvis.com. You can always find us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thatdarnelvis. On Twitter, Scott is at Andy Vera, and Daniel is at Daniel Brewer.
This podcast is a proud member of the Pride 48 Podcasting Network. Check out more great shows at pride48.com.